You're listening to the Wheel of Time TV podcast with Jay and Colin.
Welcome back to Renland. We have a really fun episode prepared for you today, and a lot to celebrate. We have two birthdays in the house, our Mihail Colin and our editor Matt. Happy birthday, guys. In other news, I went ahead and married our editor, slash my warder, slash Matt Posey. So now I am officially Jay Posey. First up, we're going to be talking about Wheel of Time on Prime production news, and later we'll be joined by some very special guests to talk about accessibility and disabilities in the Wheel of Time. What did you think about the first glimpses of the Wine Spring Inn?
Oh, it was cool. I liked it.
Yeah, it's cute.
When I put that together with those leaked shots of like Matt and Rand, where it looked like they were on the road, you know, and Matt was blind or whatever.
Yeah.
I like that trajectory of like the bright, cute, like happy, idyllic, like village going to kind of like that grittier, darker, along with the quality and the textures that you could see in that, specifically that second picture, and even in the first one. I was pleased with the production value that was apparent in those, even in the leaked photo, even though it wasn't the greatest quality.
Yeah. I like, you know, the arched architecture of it, you know, it's, and the way the roof is done and big tree on the property.
It is
really inviting.
Yeah.
And it was sweet of them to do that.
Yeah, that was nice. It was a nice little kind of heartwarming kind of like,
yeah. Especially because they've been so tight-lipped.
I mean, you only get like what, 4 chapters of like happiness and in the entire series.
I mean, in context of the whole series, it is the lightest of all the books. Yeah. You know?
It was nice to be like, yeah, here you go, before everything goes to shit.
Yeah, by the time you're in Amal, you're like, can we go back to the Two Rivers, please? Like, this got dark fast. In addition to that, or speaking of leaks, there was also leaked audition tapes for what we presumed to be the role of Leandrin. There were a few videos, and then someone transcribed the scripts so that fans could take a look. The videos have since been taken down, but we will share a piece of audio here.
Mayara Shira.
Leona.
If you've come to help us, you're too late.
Help with what?
Oh, didn't you hear?
Captured the Naga Reborn. Where were you? I wonder.
What were your initial thoughts or reactions on this, Colin?
You know, I'm always torn when we get, like, these leaked things. But I will admit, like, I at least read the scripts, and I watched some of them. And it was interesting to see assuming they're actually using these scripts or they're actually going with what is revealed in these audition videos. It was interesting to see this expanded role for what seems to be Leandrin.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, and it seems like a wise choice based on what we know of, you know, expanded role for Logan. And it seems as though, as the kind of synopsis that I read said, like, okay, this could be like the party that's traveling with Logan to take him to Tar Valon, right? I was like, okay, yeah, that's cool. That makes sense. Especially since we kind of need that antagonistic force in that first book, aside from Peyton Fane, you know?
Yes.
Because we don't have Elida yet, really. But then it made me wonder, like, because we still haven't seen Elaine or Gawain or any castings for that. So I was like, oh, I wonder if they're trying to swap those characters out or something like that.
Yeah, I was a little thrown off. Well, first I'll say, when you get a script for a casting tape, it is not literally a scene from the show,
right?
You know, because that would be too risky. So I know I did see some fans thinking, you know, oh, they just changed the names or words. Most likely these are fabricated, but recreating tensions or emotions that the director wants to see between, you know, for example, I think there's Mishera and Leona are the names, but we presume it's Leandrin and Moraine.
Right.
You know, they might not meet in that setting while Leandrin's guarding Loghain, but they might meet later. But one thing it did bring up for me, because we've talked about, you know, will they combine any of Eye of the World and The Great Hunt? and there is that episode called The Flame of Tar-Valon. Mm-hmm. What if the Nynaeve and Egwene and Moraine cross over with the caravan, we'll call it, of Loghain being carried to Tar-Valon in season one, you know, rather than waiting to fall Dara, which is what these scenes sort of implied, because Lyonna is talking about Nynaeve and we assume Egwene. And it's almost like in Fall Dara when they leave and they're on the road to Tar-Valon and Nynaeve and Egwene get lessons from different Aes Sedai. Like part of the script sort of looks like that.
I like your braid. Naughty, isn't it? I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing it. With the accent, I can't quite place it.
I imagine you came over here because you want something. You just always do. So I think I'll ask the questions first. Depending on how well you answer, maybe I'll give you what you want. How long have you known my arm?
So, sure. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's completely reasonable. Yeah, I really do wonder how this is going to play out. I'm curious to see what exactly they're going to be using from those scripts. You know?
It is fun to see the words and names that they change in the audition scripts. For instance, the Naga Reborn.
Uh-huh. That was a pretty good one. Yeah, I was like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It was good.
Yeah.
In the same article, they also said that Michael DeCruz was added to the cast as a character named Zaheer.
Hmm.
And I have no idea who it could be.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, that could be anyone.
Anyone. Yeah. It's a cool name, Zaheer. It does sound like maybe a Borderlander name, just because I know we have like Zareen from Celdia, you know. Maybe it's a Borderlander, or maybe someone that could be traveling with Loghain. I believe in the books and in the audition tape, they have Leandrin saying they paid off Loghain's guards. They had his own people turn against him is how they caught him.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So maybe Zaheer could be one of them. I don't know.
We've got a rising list of new names that we don't know whether or not we can believe in or not.
I mean, at least his name's Zaheer and not like Frank. Right. You know,
Douglas. Yeah.
Yeah. I had some fun on Twitter of time today. I asked people to describe the plot of different SFF content using only Wheel of Time terminology and like names and concepts.
Nice.
We got people doing the Name of the Wind, Star Trek, or Star Wars, Dune. It was pretty funny.
Nice.
Some of them, when you use only Wheel of Time terminology, I mean, it just sounds like fan fiction, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely.
It's pretty funny. Or some of it sounds exactly the same plot as the Wheel of Time.
Like, you're just talking about the Wheel of Time. That's funny.
But it's because, and I've been thinking about this because I just read Dune and it got me very excited and my mind sort of been reeling from it because it was the first time I read it. Mm-hmm. But it reminded me of, you know, the tropes that carry over between both fiction and science fiction, you know?
Yeah.
But the idea of desert worlds or people who live in the waste, you know, where water's scarce, scarcity is always like a trope that's used in fiction, especially fantasy fiction. And
right.
So I don't know, it's interesting to think about it.
No, that's true. I actually just watched Mad Max the other day, a couple days ago. Fury Road specifically. I love that movie. Fantastic. But yeah, I was thinking a lot about the idea of scarcities and how they're employed in that story.
Mm-hmm.
That's how the entire structure of that world is created.
My friends, become addicted to water. It will take hold of you, and you will resent its absence.
Yeah, we should revisit it sometime. I read this article once that was about economies of fantasy worlds, mm-hmm. and how, you know, economists find fiction really fascinating because a lot of the world has to be built around what are the resources, what is the commerce, like how does value exchange work?
Yeah.
And that is like a really intriguing, fun part of these worlds, you know?
Absolutely. I think it's the minutia that like makes it feel real. Because it's something you don't really necessarily talk about. Like it's not you don't have dialogue about like the minutia of how money is, you know,
changing
hands throughout the city. But that's what makes it feel like real and makes sense, you know?
Yeah. So they get around some of it in the Wheel of Time with gateways. They're like, eh, sieges don't matter anymore. Everyone's fed in wartime. And Matrim Cawthon has luck, so we'll never run out of money. And we have rich friends. Yeah. Like the Aes Sedai, I don't see them refilling their coins a lot, but they must just have, you know, gold satchel lined skirts.
Yeah, right.
You know, like all the time. Yeah. I don't know. The idea of carrying money on your person in Ranland would really scare me.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to have like multiple purses like placed throughout, like around your body, I would imagine.
Yeah, definitely.
Which seems encumbering, but hey. There was kind of an article about another project called I Care a Lot, and it features the writer-director Jay Blakeson, and Rosamund Pike is in it. It's kind of a 10-minute video. At the end of the video, maybe like there's like a minute and a half left, where the interviewer asks her about the Wheel of Time production and how it's going, and she kind of talks about how they're back now after kind of taking the hiatus for quarantining. And how everything's kind of like, everyone's happy to see one another and everyone's excited to be back on the project, but it's different, you know, like, because film and production and anything where you're kind of in the performing arts is like, especially in when you're acting, they're very close-knit and hands-on and in a familial environment. And it's hard to do that in today's, you know, kind of situation, so.
Yeah, it's gotta be very different energy on set with the crew, you know, like totally a different vibe.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like people are just the crew members, I know, not of Wheel of Time, but just in filming in Los Angeles. They're trying to be as normal as possible, but you really have to sort of just stay in your department and have minimal contact and get tested all the time. So
right.
I'm sure it doesn't have the same camaraderie or the same energy on set since it's probably more siloed and intimate.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be tough though with like 500 people on that on set, you know.
Yeah, I bet the biggest role is to like stay the fuck away from the actors.
Yeah, right. When I was watching the video, I was thinking like, yeah, like I bet you probably don't interact with like anyone, like Rosamund, like you're probably like isolated. I mean, obviously yeah. People have scenes with, but like I could see her being like, no, don't come over here.
Right. Yeah. You know, there's probably like just their makeup people.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it's different too. I mean, sometimes you hear from actors and they always make it a point to try to talk to some of the below the line crew or, you know, be kind to everyone, but you kind of just have to be a separatist in this. Like you just have to separate yourself. And
I'm sure that's got to be tough, especially for people who are more interested in kind of reaching out in that way.
We are back up and in production, which is very exciting. We're a week into actual shooting again, having stopped back on March the 13th, and everybody is really committed. And, you know, we've got the most astonishing protocols in place, and we're trying to, you know, keep a very, very big production running. You know, we've got 500 people who we're trying to keep healthy and deliver, you know, the same standard. And it's not easy. It's not easy shooting in these times. And we've got amazing things in place, and it's, you know, we're all working with a new reality, you know, with this sort of distancing effect, as you know, that the masks and social distancing, you know, and film is not conducive to those protocols. You know, people are work closely, and it's very, you know, we work closely together. It's very personal, it's very hands-on. All those things are having to be reevaluated, but I mean, we are all so happy to be back in these characters who've sort of, we were just cut dead in March, and we were right in the thick of the, you know, this amazing epic journey. So back in the saddle, literally.
It's exciting though. They're going to be done shooting soon.
I know, right?
It means we're going to have a show.
We could have a show in less than a year. We could be watching the Wheel of Time.
I know. They could have been just doing so much post-production this whole time.
It's true. We could be like in our fifth rerun of the season by this time next year.
Next up, I'm very excited to introduce you to Eddie and Micah of Eyes Vashon. If you don't follow them on Twitter of Time, go ahead and follow at WOT Eyes Vashon. They are awesome. They have their own podcast in the works, so look out for that. And today they're joining us to talk about disabilities and accessibility as it relates to the Wheel of Time series, both in the fandom, in the books, and in the upcoming TV series on Amazon. Well, thank you both for joining Randland. We're so excited to have you. For everyone listening, we're joined by our members of Eyes Vashon, Eddie and Micah. Eddie, will you tell us what Eyes Vashon means? Am I saying it right?
Yeah,
yes.
That's how you say it.
Eyes Vashon means a place for all.
And you two met on Twitter of Time, bonding over the Wheel of Time.
Yep.
Yes. A wild chance encounter on just a random thread. I think you actually made, Micah.
I did.
About whether or not they would be able to enjoy the show because they're blind.
And we don't know if Amazon Wheel of Time on Prime will have audio described video when the show comes out. So can you tell us even more, just expanding on that, how Eyes Vashon got started and kind of what your message to the community has been to increase inclusivity and accessibility and social?
Yeah, we were actually in that thread talking about me and a couple other people. I don't remember who, so if you were in there, chime in. We were talking on the thread about what options we had for Micah. Like, could we do a podcast? Could we record it? Could we do an Amazon watch party? Just different things that we really wanted to get Micah included and any other, you know, blind people that wouldn't be able to enjoy the show for the same reason if they don't do audio descriptions. We just kept talking about it kind of in DMs and off to the side. And we actually, that weekend, I literally went and bought a domain for What Eyes Vashon, or I think just eyesvashon.com. And we don't have anything on there yet, but, you know, it's a real website.
This idea is only like a month or two old, less than 2 months old. So,
yeah.
Well, it's really exciting. And I'm sure you have enough time to start making content and get your message out there before the show comes out, since we're still in production.
It started as a more narrow scope, obviously, but it has expanded to so many different ideas.
Oh, yeah.
Because obviously being blind isn't the only disability out there. And so we want to be able to talk about all of the disabilities that might affect not just obviously real life interaction with the Wheel of Time community, but also with characters in the show and, you know, mental health issues and different things like that.
Awesome. Yeah, I think, you know, we definitely want to touch on some of those topics today. Before we get too serious, I thought we might do some icebreakers. Colin and I sometimes joke around about different, you know, sketches or Wheel of Time scenarios. And one of them is the, or do you want to tell it, Colin?
One of them is like the bell time, like daddy like show. So like, or like a daddy, like, what do you call that? Like, when you have like a dating auction or something
like
that?
Auction. Yeah. Yeah, daddy auction.
Yes. So the scenario that we thought of is like, who would be your candidate for the daddy dating auction?
Yeah.
We want to purchase, or candidate we would put up for auction?
I think we could go either way. I'll start off with my candidate, and that is Thatcher Daddy. You know, we just faced a harsh winter. Everyone's roof needs repair. Who doesn't want a good Thatcher Daddy? He might look old and gnarled, but he knows his way around the roof.
I thought you said Badger Daddy.
Okay, that's official. My My nomination is now Badger Daddy. That's too good.
I was super confused.
Oh, that's good.
That's way too good to pass up.
We have Thatcher Daddy and Badger Daddy. Eddie, I don't know if you can top that, but...
Yeah, right?
Okay, well, I don't know how... You brought in some very dark humor, kind of, that Ellie, and that is my specialty. So I was thinking, obviously, the classic Farmer Two Rivers, Emmonsfield sheepherder, because, you know, at the end of the day, once they process everything, they can get some good sheepskin for the condoms. I don't know what rating this podcast is.
Redland branded lambskin condoms.
That's our thing. Cut
that if you need.
Early in our season one, that was our favorite thing, is Two Rivers sheepskin condoms.
Oh my god.
And for Colin's birthday last year, I got him lambskin condoms.
Awesome.
He still has them. Colin, do you want to throw out some additional daddy options? You know, we got to round out this auction.
I think we have, like, who did we have? I think we had Innkeeper Daddy.
Mm-hmm. Warder Daddy.
Warder Daddy, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Warder Daddy, Archer Daddy. Thatcher Daddy was...
Thatcher Daddy!
Yeah.
Thatcher Daddy going once, Thatcher Daddy going twice. Sold. I think you're missing potentially the most important, which is Dark Friend Daddy.
Dark Friend Daddy, right.
Oh, well, that concludes the Beltane Daddy show. I think this could be our best Cav turnout yet.
Yeah. Silent auction.
I think we just made a lot of money that night.
Apple brandy for everyone. The way I came across both of you on Twitter of Time was when you posted about the importance of image descriptions and, you know, alt descriptions when you're posting video or GIFs or pictures on Twitter and Instagram. Micah, do you want to talk a little about that and, like, what it means to you when people do it, and also how it affects, you know, your experience when it's absent?
Yeah. When I'm on Facebook or Twitter, since those are the only two social medias I have, if there's not a description for the pictures, on Facebook, sometimes my screen reader will give a vague description. And if it's a picture of text, it'll normally read the text sometimes. But if it's like a selfie, it'll say something along the lines of, image may contain one person, glasses, stripes. And so that tells me almost nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so adding a description is really helpful for that. And on Twitter, it does even less. For photos, it just says image. And for GIFs, I think some GIFs come with some auto-generated alt text, but it's really useless, like angry Thor GIF or something like that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it doesn't tell me what's going on in the GIF or what the point the person who posted it is trying to get across or anything like that. So adding descriptions to photos or GIFs helps me feel included and helps me laugh along with everyone else and makes me feel like people actually care about having me in the conversation. Plus, it helps me, you know, whenever I have to ask for a description, I kind of feel like an asshole because, you know, I it feels really invasive sometimes.
Well, you're definitely not an asshole, and I would encourage everyone listening to this to just start doing this in their practice. If you forget sometimes, you can add it to the comments afterwards.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with forgetting, and, you know, if it's an honest mistake, then I'll understand that. But the one thing that I have a hard time understanding and have a hard time forgiving is making no effort at all.
Yeah.
That makes me feel like shit, honestly. So.
Yeah. And Eddie, you made a good point when you and I first met, which is that, you know, we're all, while we are all loving getting to know Micah, there are lots of people out there we don't know, and you don't need to personally be aware or know of someone in a community that needs this added description. You should just do this as part of your practice. But
exactly. Accessibility is a right.
Exactly. And it applies to, I mean, like I said, obviously in this context, we're talking about alt descriptions for the visually impaired. But when you start thinking that scope, when people have this mindset, their perception of what they have lived, their lived experiences, part of what Micah have talked and I have talked about, the ideas we want to bring up to people, you know, in a podcast or through Twitter, whatever we kind of, as we push out to people, right, is that those are your lived experiences and that's fine, but it doesn't hurt to understand other people's worldviews, perspectives, and understand that just because that's what you have lived doesn't mean it's the default, you know, and it shouldn't be, because to a certain degree, obviously that's just society. You know, the default is not necessarily thinking about the minorities in whatever aspect that you have. And so this sort of applies to everything, but obviously we want to focus on different aspects of disability.
On maybe a happier note, Micah, I know through our Zoom calls for Seal to the Tower that now that you are getting to know some people in the community, the opposite is happening, where people are adding image descriptions specifically designed for your entertainment, which other people may not appreciate. But
yeah, because there's a field on Twitter and Facebook, but it's easier to find on Twitter, where you can add a description that only screen readers can read. So since I'm the only screen reader user that anybody on Twitter of Time knows, they started putting messages and stuff into their alt text. So often I'll start laughing more at the alt text than, you know, the description of the picture or GIF itself. I'll laugh more at the secret message than anything else, and it's wonderful.
That's sort of what I actually did earlier. I posted for the Aja Appreciation Day. Part of it was just because, like, you know, haha for me, but my alt text was a beautiful ass man wearing a mask.
And he described the mask and he said, "I am the beautiful ass man," and I started dying at that.
When I started adding the descriptions, I realized that it does force you to work on your descriptive writing skills, you know, which not everyone gets to practice. A lot of the time when I'm writing, it's for work stuff and it's super dry. So you actually have to think, especially when it's something that's a meme or a GIF, about how you're going to describe something. And I was wondering if there's any advice or tips that you would share with people that make it you know, a better description for you, or a vivid description, or if there's anything to avoid that's confusing. I want to get better at it.
In terms of what to add, if it's a meme or something, don't just say something really general, like a SpongeBob meme or something. Describe what's going on in the meme. The people, if the facial expressions are relevant, describe those. If they're not relevant, you can if you want to. If there's any text, describe that. Describe, you know, what's relevant in the meme, and describe what's going on. Describe the actions or the text or the facial expressions or whatever's going on that makes the GIF or the meme relevant to the conversation or funny or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So maybe an example, like when the show comes out, if people start using GIFs, you know, everybody will, I know, because we're crazy, but when we start using GIFs from the show and it's a scene where Nynaeve is angry and somebody does alt text that says Nynaeve is giving attitude or something, that's may not be descriptive. I don't know, Micah, if you want to.
Depending on the situation, if you're just posting it kind of like in a general sense, saying Nynaeve giving attitude could be entertaining in and of itself, but if you want to bring attention to more than just her giving attitude, say Nynaeve glaring at Lan with an intense look on her face while gripping her braid, right, or something like that.
I think that's great.
Yeah,
that's, totally. I think that's really helpful advice.
Yeah, I think oftentimes when we select a meme or a GIF or whatever, like there is, at least when I do, I could say there's sometimes a context, a reason why I'm selecting that one, that particular yeah. one, right? I could have chosen any thumbs up GIFs, but I chose that one. So if that context exists for your post, then maybe you should include that, right? Is, I think, is what you're saying.
Definitely.
I think that was a really great discussion of how we can be more inclusive and make content more accessible, you know, mm-hmm. in social and in the community. But I know that you both also are passionate Wheel of Time fans who who think about this, you know, perspective and context of the books and what happens in them.
Micah, your tweet about needing to see the One Power, needing to see the flows in order to channel them.
Mm-hmm.
And we were kind of we wanted to kind of like open up that discussion and think about like what that might look like. The way you kind of framed it, Jamie, is that like it could be seen as just maybe a block as opposed to an actuality of the situation.
Yeah, like giving in context, Micah, I know like in your tweet you said it's sort of prescribed in the books that you need to be able to see the One Power to channel. Mm-hmm. I know you have some arguments against that, and I had so many arguments.
Yeah.
But really? I was just thinking like, well, maybe it's just like this self-imposed limitation. You know, they just believe they need to see it, but it's not actually yeah. true. Just like when they have yeah. a block, they yeah. believe, you know, this needs to happen for them to channel, but it's not true.
That's exactly how I think about it.
Yeah.
Don't the Aiel actually have that conversation with Egwene and Moiraine in like book 4 or something?
I think
or
so.
Or 5.
They have a similar conversation where they're talking, I think it's later on, where they're talking to, I think, Cad Swain and some of the other Aes Sedai, where they're talking about how they don't need to, how the wise ones don't need to use the hand motions that Aes Sedai do.
Yes. Right.
And
right.
so if the hand motions are kind of an unnecessary thing, but they've taught themselves that it's necessary, why can't seeing be the same?
Sure.
Where yeah. it's not strictly necessary, but since the vast majority of channelers are sighted, they think it is.
Yeah. I think Jamie and I were discussing it earlier, and I couldn't remember the exact book or moment, but I seem to remember a time at which I think it was one of the Forsaken kind of talks about, is talking about another channeler and saying that they weren't able to channel outside of their field of vision because they believed that they were unable to channel outside of their field of vision.
Right.
Oh, yeah. It is an Ashaman, I think, right?
If it's the part I'm thinking of, I just reread it not too long ago, so I can remember it pretty well. It's in Path of Daggers when the Aes Sedai come mm-hmm. to the Black Tower to try to take over.
Yes.
And the one red sister is saying that men who channel are convinced that they can only affect things they can see.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the part I'm talking about exactly, yes.
Yeah, I just reread it the other day.
In those contexts, I think we have sort of the in-text proof that yeah. you don't need to see to be able to channel.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, there's an Ashaman who believes he can only channel up to like 50 feet or
it's
something.
It's Fedwin Moore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's also, so I think there's a really good basis for the argument that it's something fabricated. Yeah. I think one of you touched on something that I just thought was hilarious, which is the Aes Sedai belief that they need to use their hands. And the Aiel are like, what are you talking about? And it's like, of course the White Tower would have some pompous affectation to make their yeah. like, make their channeling more like flamboyant and grandiose.
it's like the Jedi mind trick, you know, where they wave their hand in the air like, these are not the droids you are looking for. The hand motion isn't necessary.
I was thinking that of course they have to use hand movements because, you know, their symbol of power is very phallic, so you need hand movements to control it.
Oh my god.
I'm trying not to take it there at every moment, but so.
Oh, it's okay. I mean, Tar Valon looks like a vagina, so.
It really yeah. does. Yeah.
It's
and I know that from the map that I yeah. was
I would like oh that God. Map. You have a map of like Wap Island, just.
I said certified free. 7 days a week.
Can we, instead of calling them Ajas, can we just call them Wappas?
That should be the out of context quote of the day.
Oh, we're getting pretty off topic now. I don't know how to bring this back to a serious conversation. I mean, think about Cad Swain naked.
Did you guys see Rafe Judkins posted to his Instagram story a video he shared a post that included these four old Asian ladies that they call themselves fashion grannies on TikTok, and they just post videos in just really chic outfits looking super badass and playing to, you know, hip music. I do not sound young here.
You're like, those are my best friends.
Just to, you know, modern hip songs. Hip-hop kids. So Rafe Judkins posted that. I saw it on Facebook earlier. And, you know, it's on Facebook, so people were complaining about it. And like, oh, because Rafe said, I hope the Black Aja reveal is as good as this.
Yes.
On his Instagram post.
Yeah.
And people were complaining about it, as they're wont to do on Facebook, because it's a cesspit.
Yeah. Facebook,
it was a cool video. Facebook is the bore.
Yeah, it was. And I actually found one of their videos where they were all in white dresses. Spoiler alert, I captioned it as when Egwene opens the novice books. And it was just them dancing in these white outfits. Yeah. It was just super cool.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that it had that response. It was a cool video. It was fun.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, maybe
we don't. We don't follow Facebook for that reason. I just don't have space for it. All right. I do want to continue our discussion on disabilities. So one thing that I wanted your perspective on, Eddie, and we've talked a little bit about this, but is chronic pain in context of Rand and like the pain that he carries around. And I wanted to read a passage and then talk about this because I want to know if you would consider chronic pain, you know, a disability, or how we would sort of talk about this in Randland. But this is from Winter's Heart. It is right after Min, Elaine, and Avienda bond Rand, and Min can sense Rand through the bond for the first time. And she says, "Oh, light Rand, the pain," Min murmured in a hurt voice. "I never knew. I never imagined. How can you stand it? There are pains you don't even seem to know, as if you've lived with them so long they're part of you. Those herons on your hands, you can still feel the branding. Those things on your arms hurt. And your side, oh light, your side. Why aren't you crying, Rand? Why aren't you crying?" And I know when Eddie and I chatted, this passage came up. And it's the first time we get sort of a full acknowledgement of the breadth of the chronic pain that Rand is living with. And I think, you know, we criticize Rand a lot as fans and, you know, readers. And I think this gets sort of overlooked or just like with everything else going on. So I wanted your thoughts on this.
I mean, personally, and I think to a lot of people, it can definitely be a sensitive topic. But I think a comment I had made was that on a daily basis, I sort of bargain with myself what activities is worth the pain. Because physically, I was in the Army and I had flat feet and it was all good and dandy until it wasn't. And I had flat foot reconstructive surgery and it sort of helped, but not really. So, I've got chronic pain like all up through from in my feet, up through my hips and everything. So it's fun. So on that daily basis, I have to say, is it worth it to do whatever activity, even something as simple like, do I want to clean the house now or do I want to do it later or tomorrow? Was I on my feet at work a lot? I mean, in terms of Rand's perspective, I can only imagine like he had to do things. There's times where I'm like, crap, I have to take the trash out, but I'm in pain. So things like that. Like, but obviously on this grand epic fantasy scale, Rand, you know, savior of the world, breaker of the world, he had to, keep going. And so that toll honestly does take a lot, not just physically, but mentally. And he had the taint to deal with as well, right? So
yeah.
I like I said, I can only imagine how tough it is. And yeah, you're right. We give Rand as a character so much crap. Honestly, a lot of it well-deserved. But I think in that context, we don't actually evaluate everything he's dealing with and try to put ourselves in his shoes.
Yeah, and it's the same way with the mental stuff that he goes through too, because like we never really try to put ourselves into, say, his claustrophobia post Dumai's Wells. Mm-hmm. You know, we never think about that. We just like to dump on Rand because he's flawed, but right. we don't take a lot of time to consider that he has a lot of very good, very valid reasons to be flawed and to be the way that he is.
Yeah, that I would say, like, I don't think we give him, I mean, personally, and just from listening to a majority of fans, I don't think we give him enough empathy. You know, we're just focusing on the job that he's doing, not yeah. what he's carrying to get there. And so we can forgive him more and give more empathy to him because it's actually extraordinary that he deals with it as well as he does. Yeah. Probably. One thing I was thinking about, because I really started to focus on the physical and emotional trauma of, you know, being in the box and Dumai's Wells. Mm-hmm. There's all the injuries he sustained. Then when he loses his hand, you know, that scene is portrayed as him being numb. You know, like, I mean, he has like a phantom hand, but Min is just like, why aren't you weeping? Why aren't you freaking out? Why aren't you angry, like grieving? Yeah. And he like literally doesn't have time to grieve for himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It's heartbreaking.
In modern day medicine, right? Like if somebody goes through a massive physical trauma, even if they don't lose a limb or anything, even if they have, you know, just loss of mobility, loss of feeling or anything where they have to go through rehab to get sort of as back to normal as possible. Included in that is counseling and therapy to deal with that. So yeah, Rand couldn't have. And then touching back to what you said a little bit earlier, but we don't really give him empathy at all. So I understand, I mean, on a personal, you know, relatable level, that it's easy to not talk about stuff that affects you like 24/7 because you yep. yourself learn to ignore it. You learn to just be like, okay, let me not let this affect my life as much as possible.
Yep.
You want to enjoy life and enjoy the good things without focusing on that negative. Mm-hmm. So much. And there's definitely times where I do things where I'm like, oh, this is going to hurt later, especially when I'm drunk. but you know what? At the time, it's worth it. And it's like, okay, deal with it later. So I get that, you know, his sort of silence about it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's yeah. a good point. Whenever we do kind of, whenever Jordan reminds us of that, we're seeing it generally through the eyes of another character. We see it through right. Men when they're bonded. We see it through kind of Elaine earlier on before the bonding, but when she kind of witnesses Rand's kind of struggling to hold on to the power, like all the things that he has to deal with, the mental strain that he has to deal with, we see those weaknesses and those moments of him struggling through the eyes of other people often.
I think when Nynaeve and Damer Flynn, right? Dahmer, mm-hmm. whatever his name is, when they delve him in yeah. wherever it was after mm-hmm. that one attack, they both get a sense of that as well.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about Nynaeve because she's never personally been a favorite character, but I know she is a favorite character for a lot of people. So I've been trying to think about her differently. And I think, you know, to your point, Eddie, of Nynaeve being of the yellow Aja and being a healer is also one of the most familiar people with what Rand is enduring, like the pain. And she is also the one person from growing up that like stays by his side yeah. and is fiercely protective of him. Yep. So I feel like she's aside from, you know, the women who
the anger
stands. Yeah. No. Nynaeve.
I thought you were going a different way with that.
No, I mean, and I do wonder, you know, people have speculated over whether or not they will keep the relationship between all three women and Rand as it is in the books. And I do think that their triple bond is something that really helps him cope with this pain in a way. Mm-hmm. Oh, so yeah. I do think it's important on that level. And I hadn't really thought about how that helps him physically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does. I think, again, this is obviously relating to my own personal experience, but it does help when you have a support group, you know, and people who care enough to say, hey, actually, take it easy, buddy. You're being an idiot. You know, you're pushing yourself too much. The other day, last week sometime, me and my one of my roommates, one of my best friends, were at the store or somewhere, and like I didn't say anything, and he's like, "Are you all right?" And I'm like, "Yeah, it's fine." And he goes, "Are you sure?" Because like I was wearing flip flops, really bad for me, but whatever. And he's like, "Well, your feet look angry." Literally is what he said. He goes, "I can tell you're in more pain when your scars are more inflamed and red." And so like imagine Rand having like with Min and them and saying, "Hey, you know, they can feel it. They know exactly what he's going through." And they tell him, "Hey, take it easy.
Yeah.
Relax." Mm-hmm.
Well, this has been so awesome. Is there anything you want to share with fans or tell fans?
I just want to say that personally, I'm really super excited both for what we've done tonight and for Eyes of Ashan to really get started. It's going to be great, and I really hope that it opens people's eyes to a different perspective and, you know, helps people realize that there's always more to learn. There's always a different perspective to view the world from. And you know, I think that being more compassionate toward people is always a good thing. And so I hope that what we do kind of helps towards that goal and helps, you know, if somebody's posting sad posting on Twitter, like I do, about like, you know, things are really hard for me tonight or whatever. And I want people to be more equipped to deal with that and like know how to respond better, I guess, or just in any situation, know how to react to people who are different than them and that kind of thing. I just want people to be more accepting.
Yeah. And sort of, you know, along those same lines with Eyes of Ashan, again, the name means a place for all. We want people who are directly impacted by their own disabilities or someone they know to be able to feel welcome in the community, which the Twitter of Time community, I think, is one of the best communities ever. Very welcoming in like all regards. And again, it just comes down to a knowledge, you know, a knowledge aspect of do people know about this? So in every way we can, we're not experts. And, you know, Mike and I were actually talking about, we're, you know, recording some like openings for podcasts. And we want to let people know that we're not experts. We don't know everything, but we want to be able to invite people to share their experiences, get people to be more open-minded, and just everyone be able to enjoy the community and each other, you know, in a good way.
Yeah.
Also, I do have a 300-page manuscript on why Egwene is the best character I'd like to read. But maybe
we might have to fight on that one.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Please remember, go vote. If you haven't registered or requested your mail-in ballot, go ahead and do that now. Locate your local polling places and also research where the official mail-in ballot boxes are. Micah made a great point when they said we need to have more compassion for one another and our different lived experiences. So when you're voting, you're not just voting for yourself, you're voting for the rights and protections of others. So do your research and get out and vote. Thanks, guys. Yeah.
Micah, this is Jay. Colin's here. Eddie's here.
Hello.
Hello.
Your default name is Calm Subwoofer.
That's my code name.
Yeah.
And actually, that would be a decent drag name.
That's amazing.
Calm Subwoofer.
Then Eddie's drag name is Brave Emoji.
Which, pretty accurate. Although, my actual real drag name is Tilda Morrow.
Oh, nice.
Right.
I love that.
That's a pretty one. Sexy drag name.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. And my pickup line was, ask me how long I'm going to love you, and I would say, Tilda Morrow.
Oh my god, I love that. Yours is definitely better than Calm Subwoofer.
I disagree. That's the most I've laughed all day.